Welcome to Outstanding in the Field, a podcast by Perennia highlighting production practices, pest management, and more for field crops in Nova Scotia. I'm your host and provincial field crop specialist, Caitlin Condon. This episode is co-hosted by my colleague, Hugh Liu, Perennia's wild blueberry specialist. What do field crops and wild blueberries have in common, you may ask? We all use sprayers. This episode, we're joined by Dr. Fred Whitford, professor and pesticide program coordinator at Purdue University Cooperative Extension Service in Indiana. Dr. Whitford joined us for a webinar in January 2023 as part of Perennia's Getting Into the Weeds seminar series, and he had so much great information to share that we had to pick his brain some more. Our discussion today touches on several topics surrounding pesticide mixing and application that should set you up for a successful season.
Fred, welcome back. Let's start with a general and broader question. So to have a better spray performance, what are some key factors should growers consider beforehand?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question in terms of, you know, every person, every field, every location can have different things. But there's probably a couple, three or four things that come to mind to me across all areas. And one is, if the label asks you to use an adjuvant, and that could be a pH, hardness, surfactant, I think we'll probably talk more about that later, crop oil, that if you do not use that product, you will not get the level of performance you expect. So you're going to try to save money by skipping all these things. And in fact, what you're doing is you're skipping on efficacy. And people say, well, how do you know that? Well, for the most part, the basic industry manufacturers don't make any money off their surfactants. That comes from the people you're buying your products from. They are making the money. So why would a manufacturer want to increase the price of their product? Because it's the product plus the adjuvant, when they're in a competition for pennies on the acre. And so, folks, it's my experience that if you don't use these adjuvants, you need to go to another product or spend the money and make it work the way it's supposed to work. Another one under that same bullet was nozzle selection. I've been working on a nozzle publication now for about a year, and I was actually surprised at what I did not know. And so at least, Hugh, it seemed like to me that if I am in your blueberry, that there are diseases, there are insects, and there's weeds. And one nozzle type will not cover all of those. That it is true that I can get 4 gallons, a 0.4 gallons, or 0.3, or 0.2. Yeah, they're color-coded. But what I'm really looking at, which has been the last, X number of decades, is inside where it tells you, is it a fine? Is it a coarse? Is it a medium? That is as critically important when I'm dealing with fungicides versus herbicides and maybe even insecticides. So to appreciate that these nozzles are state-of-the-art piece of equipment. And probably the reason nobody pays any attention to them, because they don't cost that much, relatively speaking. We put all of our, you know, emphasis on glamour stuff. But in fact, nozzle selection is still critically important if we're trying to control the pest as much as we can. Another one that seems to me, Hugh, that across the board, that we don't appreciate, that it takes time for this product to dry on a leaf or to penetrate a leaf. And I call that rainfastness. And many of these products have got hours and hours before they actually are rainfast. And so your folks that are listening to this should find out, how long does it take for this product sitting on a leaf before it either goes into the leaf, like herbicides, or dries on the outside? Because without knowing that, if there's you anticipate a rain is coming and you try to spray it real quickly and it rains and washes it off, you just throw all that money out the door and allowed your crop to be under more stress than it needed to be. I mean, especially with the kinds of products that you guys are growing to sell. The last one that seems to, that we have difficulty getting across to people, it's rotation. It's specifically with diseases. Now, people like me have made it so dadgum difficult to understand. Well, it's not. Folks, you really don't care how these things control. That's not your world. But what you should care is up on the upper right-hand corner of a label is a number. And that number is going to tell you how that product actually works. So in this particular case, Caitlin, if I was, if I had to rotate, I'm making this up, and if it said number one, then what it means is don't go back into a number one. Mm-hmm. Use whatever products that you got. Just use those numbers. You don't need to know nothing else. And then part of that problem is many of us think by swapping out brand names that we are rotating. And in fact, just the opposite of true, we got a good, we think of how many 2,4-D brand names or glyphosate brand names, right? So you don't go by brand name, you go by that number up in the corner. And if you can just stay focused on that when you're rotating, then that's what we mean by trying to basically put off some of these insects, weeds, or diseases becoming resistant. So I guess you, that's the four that came to mind for that specific question.
Thanks, Fred. And I just have a comment to make here about, you know, switching location of your products. Also, I found some of my growers, they commonly they like to eat same group products into the same tank during the same season, which I think is also a very bad decision to make, have the same group products applying at the same time, because that will really, really to get the herbicide resist, or the, you know, product resistant into your cropping system fairly.
And Hugh, even if I don't have a problem, we're not talking about, I don't need to wait till I have a problem. You should be doing it now, because when you get a problem, you're going to have you're going to feel it that year when something fails, and your crop is going to look like nobody wants it, right?
Yeah.
And you're just creating more problems, making it more difficult for later on. So, you know, this is an area we need to be proactive, because I will tell you, you will never see any new products. It's going to be in corn, beans, wheat. And then if there is a new product, then they will see, the manufacturers will see whether or not there's a market to be had, let's say in blueberries or, and Caitlin, what was your crop?
Corn, beans, and cereals. Yeah.
So Caitlin, you will see all of these new products. Yeah. And there's not a whole lot.
No.
You'll see it. And then the marketplace will determine whether Hughes farmers will see it, if there's a, because of the cost of registration. So I guess it's so important, Hugh, to just see the problems that we have in corn and beans by not people rotating. And if you're telling me it can't help it in yours, that all you got to do is look in corn and beans and see the mess that we're in now because of this resistance.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to make a comment on what you were just saying, Fred, about rotating groups, because I mean, for Hughes producers, where they have, it's the same crop every single year, so it's easy to get trapped into using those same products. And for field crops producers, it's similar, because we have so many products now that we can use in multiple crops, which seems like we're being, you know, having a favor done for us because it makes it easy, but it also just makes it easy to not rotate properly. So I want to talk a little bit about measuring pesticides. Back when we had you on for our webinar back through the winter, we talked a little bit about measuring pesticides. So what common mistakes do you see on that end of things?
And it may be just a little bit of a repeat of what we talked about, but maybe we can, you know, add detail as you see the detail needs to be added, is to appreciate the fact that the tubes any measuring device for dry material that comes with our products, and I didn't know, Caitlin, if we used a lot of those tubes in Canada. Here we use a lot of those plastic measuring tubes, yep. And we have little scoops, and we have all that stuff. And so it's to appreciate that those tubes, the markings are specific for that product. Mm-hmm. So because they're measuring weight, those tubes, the manufacturer is trying to tell us that those tubes, they've weighed it for that product. And so that you don't interchange one tube for another. Secondly, those tubes change. I can buy a product in a box, comes with tubes. The next time I order that product, that tube may have changed the markings. And when we're talking about ounces per acre, half ounces per acre, some of these changes would be very, very significant. For me, is if I could get people not to use those tubes and go to a scale, every single tube that I've seen, because they're dry tubes, but they're trying to measure it in space like a volume cup. And we talked about dry ounces, in my case, in the States, dry and liquid ounces are so different. Yeah. I don't know if it's like that in other measurements that you guys do there, but they're 7.5% to 25% off.
Now, that's a big change.
That's huge. So yeah. Sometimes when you measure in the tubes, they're right on. Sometimes they're above, and that's where you're going to spend a lot of extra money. And then sometimes they're below, and it depends on the particle size. This is why I love the scales. Mm-hmm. Measure the stuff out, and you eliminate this whole area here that we see errors being made. I have enough, Caitlin, errors built into the system from the time I mix it, get it, put it in the tank, spray it on out, weather, the environment. I get rid of what you can get rid of to improve your ability to apply the right rate. And then lastly, I thought about this some, that if the stress from the other talk, what we tried to stress, that these poly tanks, mm-hmm. just because it says it's 1,000 gallons, doesn't mean it's 1,000 gallons or 1,800 gallons or 1,200. Or for let's assume that Hughes is, I don't know, Hugh, if yours would be 300, 400 gallons tanks, sprayers. I don't know, but size doesn't make a difference in this case. And our people need to really take the time to make sure, Caitlin, that these tanks are measured properly. Mm-hmm. And either you use a flow meter to check it, go to your local ag retailer, let them fill it up with their water and get a sense, are they in fact what they say they are? Because it's going to change the rate. It's going to change how much chemical you put in the tank. And then lastly, we talked about the lines.
Yeah.
Using the lines on a poly tank when they're evenly spaced. But when my tank was elliptical, it's elliptical, mm-hmm. egg shape, it can't be even all the way up. So those are just a few of the thoughts that I had, mm-hmm. in terms of things that I see that people have done.
Yeah, definitely. I like the scale idea. Like it just, as you said, it eliminates that, you know, having to find the right tube for the right product, and you're rushing and you grab the wrong one or you have an old one, and it just takes all of that out.
And that's what we want, right?
Exactly.
In our jobs, this is what we want.
Yeah.
We want better performance, to have a better product to sell, hopefully to make more money for a high quality product. In your particular case, we want the yield. Yeah. And so it just eliminates stuff. You know, we're spent roughly $50 an acre here. We're going to do 3 applications. That's $150 an acre. If you think of what it costs to do a fungicide application of corn in your way, you start looking at all this money. When you mm-hmm. start going over, it doesn't take much to make tens of thousands of dollars, or if you go under, having to come back in and retreat.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, it's such an easy thing to do for, you know, a big savings.
Yeah, okay, well, I know in our last presentation, we also have one question that was brought up at the end of the session, but we didn't have time to discuss it. It's about cleaning tanks in between products. So what would be your recommendation on this topic? How to be better at cleaning tank and make sure you have a set up properly for your next products to go onto the field?
So I will let either one of you, if you disagree with anything that I say, speak up, because this is your world there. So for me, the main concern is if I'm using herbicides, which is what we primarily use in corn and beans and wheat, when we obviously use fungicides, but because I've seen enough crop damage, and I should say crop symptoms, because when your growers will often see symptoms, but that's not damage in terms of yield loss and quality. So Hugh, for yours, if any of your folks are using herbicides, and I don't know what their acres would be there, but if they're using herbicides and they're using that same tank to come in with the fungicide or an insecticide, oh my goodness. So if I could, and I don't know what size tanks they have, I wish I had a dedicated herbicide tank. I would do that first ahead of anything. These plastic tanks are not that expensive. I have people have separate lines where the herbicide and all of that is not mixed in with, it's kept separate. Separate lines, one for the herbicide, one for the insecticides and the fungicide. That takes care of this issue about herbicide going on the tissues of your plants. Now, a lot of people say, no, not going to do that. I'm okay. That's fine. The concern I have now, there's enough evidence that I've seen, either personally observed or some of the research, is that the rubber hoses, and this is research that came out of Mississippi State, that the rubber hoses, when you look at them, it appears to be a solid piece of material. Mm-hmm. But when you look at them under the scope, they've got holes in them inside. And so what happens is we have a lot of products that get trapped in hoses. And I can do the best clean out possible. Mm. And 3 days later, after I've been spraying and spraying and spraying, all of a sudden I get crop damage. Well, that is often because of whatever you put in there, pulled it out of the hoses. So for instance, let any one of your growers on either end of your crops there, let their hoses stay overnight and round up. And I can guarantee you that if you've got something in the hoses, it's going to pull it out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because Roundup has got surfactant soaps, if you would, that can go in there and get it and get the stuff and pull it out. Now, if you'll take that for faith on my, I guess on your part, based on the research, then I'm going to tell you that cleaning out any of these tanks with ammonia is not going to work as effectively as a commercial tank cleaner. And that was, again, some of the work at Mississippi State, because the ammonia can't get into it. Can't get into the hoses.
Okay.
So the ammonia is a high pH, and it does a good job. It contacts the chemicals and it cracks it. It breaks it. That's why you use ammonia. The advantage of a commercial tank cleaner, it's kind of like Roundup. It's got soaps. Let's just call it soaps. Mm-hmm. That can actually reach in and pull it out, which is why on the farm side, dicamba tells you to use a commercial tank cleaner. The new 2,4-D products that are coming out are telling you to use a commercial tank cleaner. And it's because what they want is to get everything out of those hoses before we spray on the wrong crop. So that's two of them, is to use a commercial tank cleaner. And then I'll go back to your listeners. If they've got any years on them, like many of us, we spent 30 years telling people how to triple rinse a stupid jug.
Yeah.
And it worked. And so what we've been able to show is that triple rinsing for big tanks, you start off clean. If you've got something in your tank, get it out. You put in water. You circulate your water. You push that out. And if you see that that water has got a lot of color to it, white, milky, whatever, you need to keep adding water. The idea is to get all as much as you can out. Then I'm going to clean my end caps and my screens. Then I'm going to do a second rinse and then a third rinse along with that tank cleaner. We found that I could actually spray the residues of dicamba on non-traded beans and not show damage by doing this triple rinse. Water is the solution to pollution. Is that what they were saying was? Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
Water is the solution to pollution. So that, and there's a reason, because that water is actually diluting. You're trying to dilute something that's very, very active on at very low levels. If it works on dicamba, Hugh, it would work on any of these.
Yeah, Fred, do you guys have any paper published to talk about simply on this topic from your?
Yeah, we got we have a whole publication that we can get that to you.
Okay.
On tank cleaning that we did a couple years back that I still do talks on all the time.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a very basic topic, but you know, unfortunately, we need some more information to teach people how to clean stuff.
So when you're doing your rinses with water, do you have a rule of thumb on how full you need to fill that tank with water?
So some people will fill the whole tank, which to me is a waste of water.
A lot of water.
Water is water is still important.
Yeah.
So what I say is you figure it out. And okay, whether it's 50 gallons, 100 gallons, 200, but it has to pass the eye test, Caitlin. So when I do my first rinse, which means it's going through the tank, I'm circulating back. We got tank cleaners. I mean, it's going across the tank. Mm-hmm. It's going to the pump and circulating. And then once I let all that water go out, it's going to go through my plumbing system. And what I want to be able to see is that water coming out after the first rinse needs to be, let's just say, clear. Mm-hmm. It might have a little tinge, but it can't be that looks like milk.
Right.
I had one that looked like milk.
Oh, yeah.
I said, that's not rinse. Well, that's all the water I got. Then you didn't use enough water. Put in more water.
Right.
It's got to come clean on that first one. That's critically important.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
So kind of along similar lines, we're coming up to the beginning of the season here now, and people are thinking about pulling their sprayers out and getting them ready for the cropping season. So what would be the common issues that you would see at the beginning of the season, and what would be your tips for kind of getting off to a strong start?
Obviously, hopefully they've been working on this during the winter time.
Yeah.
That's always our goal, to get things done where supposedly things are slower. So if we're looking at that, you know, I would say hoses.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to see on the hoses, I'm just going to walk my sprayer, and anywhere that I see a hose laying on a piece of metal, a screw, a bolt, wood, anything at all, I want to take that and flip that over, and I want to see if I see any wear. And you'll see it. It's where it's eaten into the rubber and either the steel or a reinforcement or the fiber, because that is where you're going to have a blowout. And I assume that in Canada is no different than here. If we have a spill, it's a national emergency. You'll have 45 different people show up to tell you what you should have done. And not only that, you have lost all that precious time, because if you're like us, springtime is the weather never seems to want to work with us. So for me, it's checking the hoses.
Yeah.
The second would be to make sure that anywhere I have a pressure hose, if you're using the cheaper bands, the screw-on clamps, some of you call it the radiator clamps. We have different names, screw clamps. That I want that I want those clamps. If you ever looked at them, Caitlin, the screw is straight, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can I place a something straight piece of metal over a round hose and expect it to tighten?
No.
No, because you'll strip it out before that happens.
Sure.
So if I have a screw that's here, mm-hmm. It's a weak spot on that hose. So what we do is we say screw up, screw down, so that if I have a weak link, next to it is the round part of the clamp that offsets that.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to the other one, it's got the screw and it's offset by a round. And so if you think about it, I'm trying to get a better fit so that that hose doesn't blow off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Better yet, I wish your growers would look at something called T-bolt clamps.
Okay.
And these are clamps that actually have a solid base. It's not a little piece of stupid metal with nothing. It's got a round, it's completely round.
Yeah.
It's on it. And then you've actually got a base you can tighten it down with.
Oh, nice.
And people say, well, that's $7. I can get these for 50 cents. Well, then knock yourself out. Because if you're of Canada is like the United States, most insurance policies don't cover spills.
Mm.
It's excluded from their policies. So the object is, A, to keep government off my back, and B, get my job done. Because for every breakdown I have, that's costing me time.
Yeah.
And time is pretty important, no matter. Yeah. In your case, it may be acres, right? I've got to cover. Yeah. Caitlin, Hugh, in your case, it may be a very short window to protect that, to protect those berries against a disease, right?
Yeah.
So same idea. Those, I think, would be the ones that if I could get people just to look at those two very simple things, that would be a great start.
Yeah, that would set us up for success.
Yes.
The beginning of the season.
Anyways, well, it also sounds like we had to challenge ourselves. We try to keep adding things into the tank. So Fred, when would you use an anti-forming or deforming agent?
And so I've thought about that, and it's basically a grower knows when they got a problem with foaming. I don't know if there's something I missed there, but you know, if I got a problem with foaming and some products, I mean, it starts foaming immediately. And so it's an easy fix to add just another chemistry, but it's pretty much, you know, you know, through experience whether you need to, you know, to add a product that's going to keep it, because I don't need it to be coming out of the tank making a mess. I have to slow down, let the bubbles break down. So spend the money, get it right, or switch to another product.
Okay.
We mentioned surfactants a little bit earlier off the top, but let's dig into that a little bit more now. So what exactly are surfactants doing for us?
Okay, so we have the term that people get confused. And they always say adjuvants and surfactants. So I'm going to regress a little bit. When I use the word pesticide, it means everything. Herbicide, insecticides, fungicides, rodenticides, whatever I'm using. Most people do the same thing. They say, I'm using a pesticide and herbicide. To them, a pesticide is an insecticide.
Hmm.
So a pesticide is everything. Just like the word adjuvant means something, or the word tells me that I'm going to add to the tank,
right,
an adjuvant to make that product work better. Okay.
Right.
And I used to think that these were snake oils, and we got a publication on it as well, until I actually did my homework and then realized how valuable these products are.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked, we got a number of authors that helped me. And one of them actually manufactures adjuvants. Now, their primarily business is adjuvants that are used for cancer treatments. And then he said, Fred, what do you know about Tide? I said, it's just a soap. And he said, you gotta be kidding. That's all you know. I said, yeah, just a soap. And he says, it's one of the most complex substances that we use. I said, it's just a soap. And he says, Fred, how do you think Tide or any soap? He says, how do you think they want things to work all the time? Because if it doesn't clean something, you won't buy their product. Mm-hmm. So you think about it, oils, grass, ketchup, spaghetti. I mean, you go through all the stuff. And if you've got kids, you've seen all that on clothes. Well, how does that soap get all that out? They add adjuvants. So he says, this stuff works. All right. So it took a while for me to come around. But once I started using them and really looking at this, that there's a science behind it, then now I better appreciate it. And I want to go back to what we talked earlier. If the label says to use it, for example, Roundup says you better add ammonium sulfate or the substitutes if the water is hard. If you are not doing that, then you're diluting, you put the right amount in it, but the calcium and magnesium grabs the Roundup and it can't go into the plant. That's a fact. Now, so now that we got that, let's surfactants. If you looked outside when it rains on any leaf on your car, it's always going to be a perfectly round drop. Big drops, little drops, middle drops. When it hits a leaf and comes off, it's going to splatter, mm-hmm. and then they're going to reform into drops. Many of our products, we need that drop to be flatter. If you're spraying millions of drops and every one of them was flatter, what you're doing is getting better coverage. And I would think that Hugh, with your diseases, maybe insects or our corn diseases, that I would want something, depending on, again, it's all this is climate-based, but depending on your location, I would want a flatter drop. And so a surfactant breaks that tension down to where it makes water wetter. All right, and so that water just gets wetter. And it flattens out. That's all we're doing. We're making it flatter to break what it wants to be is perfectly round, and we're going to flatten it down.
I like that. Make water wetter.
And then, so I'll flip on the other side since you brought that up, and that has to do with some products require you to add an oil.
Right.
Methylated seed oil, crop oil, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about getting grease on your head and you run water over it, the grease it stays.
Right.
So what you need is a soap to help break that down. So a crop oil, water and the oil in the leaf don't mix. Oil and water don't mix. So what the oil does, it helps to sort of liquefy the surface a little bit. And that's probably not quite correct, but it allows some cracks to be there. So when your water and your product come on that leaf, it can penetrate those cracks much easier. And okay. Especially for herbicides, because all herbicides have got to get into the leaf. So that's what a crop oil does. It just works up the surface to allow that water to get on in.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bring up another different areas on the pesticide application, Fred. It's on the 10 mix. So I asked Ken about this topic. We don't use much of insecticides. So for us, it would be most commonly mix fungicides with fungicides or fungicides with herbicides. So what would be your recommendation on the max number of products to be in the same tank together? You know, can be all fungicides or can be fungicide mixed with herbicides.
That is something you can't answer. There's no answer. However, I can tell you the fewer that you use, the fewer that you tank mix, the better off you're going to be.
Okay.
So when you add, the more products that you add, and if you ever come to the point that what you've been spraying is no longer working,
mm-hmm.
sometimes all you have to do is say, what did I add that's different? What did I add this time that I hadn't done before? Mm-hmm. Because we do have chemicals that will kill other chemicals. All right. So these, and in fact, let's assume that I put in one fungicide in your case. That's maybe one or two active ingredients, but maybe a dozen other chemistries there. It's just not the active ingredients. Most of it's going to be inerts. So mm-hmm. let's just for the sake of giggles here, we have 10 products in any jug. I'm going to bring in a second jug. Now it's 20. Another jug. Now it's 30. And so what happens is, the more you screw around with it, the more you have the likelihood of something killing and taking it completely out. And we've got examples of that in different areas. So the least that I can do, the better it's going to be. You know that if you screw that up, Hugh, you will see when it's really bad, it looked like soured milk, cottage cheese. It'll gum up. It'll completely settle out of the tank. That's what you're seeing. Incompatibility between the products. That's easy to see. What's not easy to see is if you have four products, let's just say, and one of them kills another one, and you don't see the level of control that you expected, that is what makes you think about what you're doing. So for me, Hugh, I can't tell you, all I can tell you is, and nobody does it, is to do a jar test.
Yeah, a small area, yeah.
You take four chemistries, you figure out how much water you're going to use, what's the rate per acre in the amount of water. And again, you could do a whole talk on it. And then figure out how you dilute your chemical down to your char, and you put the stuff in, and you put it in the order that you want to put it in. And then you will see all the garbage develop if it's incompatible, if it's not compatible. What I can't tell you is when one kills another one, because the jar's not going to tell me that.
Right.
So this is where, Hugh, it's important to either ask your ag retailer, what do you know about these three products? Have you guys used it? Ask the manufacturers of those three products. And again, mm-hmm. this takes time, but this is what you want, because if not, you're going to spend a lot of money for nothing. And right. I think your time is well worth it if you're fixing to spend, I don't know what your products cost, but let's just say $50 an acre, and it doesn't work. You know, you're getting a pretty good per hour paycheck by just asking these questions.
I would
ask the reps, have you seen anything detrimental by mixing these products? That's the two people that's going to know. And Hugh, the bottom line is, all of our farmers are making up mixes that the formulators could not make work. So the chemists, people who are trained chemists, can't do what we're trying to mix up. And then so lastly is, please read that label and see, does it warn me, do not mix this product with this one? And because that's experience there that appears on the label. So I didn't do a good job answering your specific question. I'm sort of defaulting on what I can answer.
No, that's perfect. That's awesome. Thanks, Fred.
Water quality, that's another area that I'm sure we could talk about just for an hour on its own.
Yep.
But
we could do programs on any of these. I mean,
we're trying to cram a lot in here.
but that may generate with your readers, that might generate some questions that, you know, we would like to have something on this.
Yeah, for sure.
So water quality, if I was to ask, if we had a seminar with your people, mm-hmm. does water influence the chemistry? Oh, yeah, Fred. Oh, yeah, we know it does. Yeah, whatever. So what is your water pH and what's your water hardness? I don't know. But you just told me that it influences how well these products work, but yet you don't know what it is. Now, Roundup would probably be one of the, would be the poster child. Roundup does not work in hard water as well as if we fix it up. And that's what ammonium sulfate does. Mm-hmm. It allows the calcium, it binds to calcium and magnesium, which frees up the Roundup to hook up with the ammonia. And the plant says, oh my God, they're fertilizing us with ammonia. And there goes the glyphosate with it and kills the plant. But we have other products that's asking us to do similar things. So for instance, and Hugh, this would be especially, well, no, for both corn and that I can actually, with our herbicides, not all, but many of them, like they like to be in acid water, which is below 7. They're acid products is what they are.
Right.
So if you put them in alkaline water, and I cherry pick some of these products, time I put it in the tank in the wrong kind of water, half the chemical is already broke down before I even leave to go spray. That's how, to me, important this is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole science to do with this, but we actually, what I always tell people is you put in your products. There are products that it's going to tell you. Do not mix an acid-loving herbicide with a one that's more, that likes alkaline. We have some that will tell you on the label. Do not put in the water that's less than 8 pH. Put that in there with Roundup. Roundup's about a 5.5. It drives pH all the way down. You just killed your other chemistry. Well, I put it in, it didn't work. Well, it didn't work because it's broke down. So there's a science to this. And so what I always tell people is you put in your products and it's so simple. And I'm holding one up here, which they won't, that's more, I guess, for you folks.
Mm-hmm.
This is a swimming pool test kit. It costs $10. I get usually 50 strips. I don't know what this one. I get 50 strips. I actually mix up my chemical into the tank. I take my strip out. And then I can just measure it on the back. It's litmus paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really simple test to do.
It's, I mean, it's so simple that and it doesn't give me 7.2345 like a lab. I don't care. Right. I want to know for my acid products, does this, am I in the acid range? If I am, I'm fine. I don't have to do nothing.
Yeah.
We have people that have done it, and they've actually, you add a product that drops the pH to make it more acid. With one caveat, if that's the right word, is you better test it before you spray it because some of this stuff really is hot. We make the product a whole lot hotter, and I don't think corn and beans is going to make any difference, but I would think blueberries, it might affect a little bit more, Hugh, but you don't want to play with it. But yeah, if you're not playing with your water, and at least make an attempt, you may be leaving a lot on the table in terms of efficacy and efficiency and everything else. And it's such a, I mean, it's just, it's $10. You could buy it in any store, fish store have it, a swimming pool, whatever that you got, you measure pH, it's important. We do pH on water coolants. We do a pH and hardness are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I can't overstate it, but most people don't want to go to the trouble.
Yeah. Is there an easy test to test your hardness?
Same strip.
Same strip. Okay, perfect. Yeah,
so you can buy either or, but on this one, my hardness is in the purple.
Okay.
And then my pH is the second. It's the orangey looking.
Okay, yep.
Get it right there. So all I do is I just take it, I dip it, I hold it up, I put it right here,
Yeah.
And just like that, 5 seconds, I know something about my pH and my hardness that I didn't know before.
Really simple, really fast, but big impact.
Inexpensive. I don't have to send it to a lab. Yeah. I don't have to go through and pay them to do it. I can do it for $10. Definitely. And at least gives me something for your listeners who are always wanting to try to bump up their efficiency, effectiveness. And we have those people that are on the forefront of stuff. And I think they would be very pleased trying it.
Yeah. Well, and even just with the price of things right now, like, you know, we've had some products really increase significantly in price. And yeah, any way to kind of make sure that you're getting the most out of your products, then yeah, seems worth it to me.
And so you think about it, a lot of what we do is, how do we eliminate all the errors up front? Right. Get rid of the tanks, the sprays, the nozzles, and fix all that, and it's fixed. And then how do we improve performance on the back end with these products? These products will work if we apply them correctly, and there's things that we can do to improve that performance, mm-hmm. Or at least to get the performance that the manufacturer is willing to support. But that's, you know, easier said than done, I guess.
Yeah. And Fred, if the growers has their own leak of wells to get their own water, what would be the minimum requirement you ask them to do a test? Would that be every season or every time they need to use the water?
So for the most part, my experience is if I'm pulling out of a well, that's pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. And so if it's consistent, I would say we'll put most of our stuff out in the spring. I'm going to be looking at it early in the spring. I'm just going to run some water. I can use my strip to see. Most of you, I think, are going to be in the alkaline water above 7. Mm-hmm. Some of you are going to be 8 and in the 9 range, which is enough to kill some of these products. The water can kill the chemical. So what we say is, know what you got for your water in the spring. Put in your chemistries that you got. Understand that most of them, you may have to ask some questions. And then mix up your chemicals and see what your pH is at that point. Hardness is a tricky one because outside of Roundup and a few others, all I can say is some of the research here at Purdue has found, for instance, that 2,4-D in hard water, and hard water in this case is 400 parts hard, takes away from the efficacy of 2,4-D.
Very good. Okay, well, I think we are good for all our questions, Fred. Thank you so much for your time and all the knowledge you brought to the table here.
And yes, really appreciate it. I know that I really enjoyed the webinar, and I think that people will really enjoy this as well, especially as we're gearing up for the growing season, and just some good reminders in there for sure.
For sure. Well, anytime I can help, just let me know. You got some other topics if you want to cover those. No issue. It's kind of easy to sit back here in this chair and talk to you. I'd rather be in person because I always learn from people, but just at least we're able to have a conversation, which is nice.
Yeah, we'll have to get you up here to Nova Scotia sometime.
You bet.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Outstanding in the Field. To view the webinar with Dr. Whitford on best practices for effective and efficient pesticide application that was referenced in this episode, please check out Perennia's YouTube page. Links to the webinar and some additional information can be found in the show notes. You can subscribe to the podcast to get a notification when there are future episodes available. Follow us on social media at NS Perennia. Thanks to Perennia for supporting this podcast and Rachel Oxner from our marketing and communications team for editing and production.